let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. In 1963, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his I Have a Dream speech in hopes of racial unity. Well, now, nearly 45 years later, Reverend Dr. Albert R. Reddick presents his dream come true, his model for overcoming racism. In his book, he merged his writings from his two books, Becoming One and the I&I Model for Overcoming Racism. You will read about Dr. Reddick's finding and analysis in Overcoming Racism, which is the fruit of his years of research, studies, and personal experiences while fighting against unlawful discrimination. Albert Reddick was inspired to write Becoming One, Volume 2, The Diversity Salad Bowl Open Mind, by observing the interaction, excitement, challenges, and behavior of the children in Becoming One Enrichment Diversity Center after-school program, and as a substitute teacher in the Chatham County School District. A Juris Doctorate from North Carolina Central University School of Law, a doctoral degree from Eastern University. He was a special student at Duke University Divinity School in 1977, where he received a certificate in Master of Divinity program. Currently president, CEO of Becoming One Enrichment Diversity Center Incorporated, and substitute teacher, Chatham County Public Schools. He resides in Chatham County, North Carolina with his wife, and Reverend Dr. Albert R. Reddick, author of Becoming One, The Diversity Salad Bowl Open Mind, is our guest on This Week in America. Dr. Reddick, it is a pleasure to have you with us on the program. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure and honor to have you with us, and such an important topic, especially today. Let's jump into it with some of the things that people are talking about, news headlines that we see. What major concerns do you have about the slogan Black Lives Matter? It's a slogan that has become the top of the newscast for the past 6 or 7 months. Any major concerns you have about that slogan?
First of all, before I get into the conversation, I need to address the worldview regarding what is justice.
Yes.
As we can see, there are many definitions for justice and social justice. Therefore, before we can really discuss the topic, we need to establish some workable framework or definition. What is justice? It's, in its simplest form, all forms or type of justice mean to set things right. To set things right. In this regard, of course, then when someone is speaking of social justice, they mean things need to be set right socially. And then, of course, when someone is speaking of political justice, they mean things need to be set right politically.
Yes.
And if they're speaking of economic justice, they mean things need to be set right economically. So what is justice? So how do we know, or how can we define what is right? Who defines right? Is it society at large? Does the government determine it? Is it an individual choice? Is there a moral law that we can inherently know to follow? So what is justice? Simple means to set things right in any form or any type. So my concern and major concerns do I have about the slogan Black Lives Matter? Number one, my major concern is that Black Lives Matter was formed in 2013 in response to the acquittal of Trayvon Martin that occurred. Black Lives Matter Foundations, Inc. is a global organization in the U.S., U.K., and Canada. Its mission is the eradication of white supremacy and build local power to intervene in violent inflictions or black communities by the state vigilantes. By combating and countering acts of violence, creating space for blacks and the imaginations, and causing black joy, we are winning and eradicating and improvements in our lives in the black community. So then, first of all, then we need to say that What does Black Lives Matter stand for? Number one, its main function is to defund the police. Defund the police don't keep in safe, and as long as we continue to put wrong and money into our corrupt criminal justice system at the expense of housing, health, and education, we will never be truly safe. So let us say we defund the police. So one issue that we have and concern with, if we defund the police, then there's an issue of safety in our communities. Not only in our communities, there's an issue of safety within our schools, a lack of police officers in our schools,
yes,
and throughout our community. And one other issue concerning Black Lives Matter is that their goal is to weed out and punish police officers involving in deaths of Black men and women. However, the indication is that the majority of policemen in this country, over 90%, are not involved in racist behavior. Therefore, that is a major concern because it is tainting the police department as a group of people that the entire police force is involved in racial behavior, which is not the case. However, as a Christian and committed believer and committed to diversity, I don't think we should support this agenda for the following reason. This generalization and stereotype agenda promotes the idea that all police officers are bad when less than 7% across the board have racist behavior. So more than 50% of who were killed were involved in criminal activity out of that controlled community order. So to defund the whole police department is not something that I think we as Christians should get behind, since there are still 95% of good officers who are needed in our schools and communities and policing our neighborhoods. Next, defunding the entire police department isn't going to some degree improve the racial problem. What does Black Lives Matter mean? When you say it first, it's not biblical, and white supremacy is not biblical. So second, it is not what it means when the word is used. Is it a slogan, a movement, or an organization? When you hear or use the term Black Lives Matter, the words could be seen as a a political rallying cry or referring to the activist organization. Secondly, it could be the fizzling applied label used to describe a wide range of protests and conversations forced on racial inequality. Third, many news organizations and commentators often use the term Black Lives Matter as the label for the largely leaderless organization, which is decentralized protest movement that have occurred across the country. Then there's the slogan. Is it an organization? Is it a movement? The slogan resonates with the sentiments of our culture, that Black lives have been disconnected, the hopes have been overlapped, and it is causing alteration to those social objections. The movement has mostly focused on the decades of Black people after encounter with the police policy. The issue of race and policing into national debate. Social media, the moderates, big bucks in the media. And based upon the One leader, Del Rey McKinnon, known as Twitter's Del Rey, is one of the most prominent activists. So one of the main issues is, of course, that Black Lives Matter is not biblically based. Also, it has a tendency to encourage African Americans to fail to disobey direct police demands. As a result, it has created a climate of violence in the nation, and it certainly will not solve the racial problems that's in the country.
With us on the program, our special guest talking about a very important issue. First of all, it's his book, Becoming One, Volume 2, The Diversity Salad Bowl Open Mind, Reverend Dr. Albert Reddick, that's R-E-D-D-I-C-K. Book available the usual places where books are sold. If you go to readersmagnet.com in the product section, you will find it there. Knew this was going to happen. Time is going by so quickly. Such an important topic we wanted to get into and getting into during the course of the program. Doctor, why is it important to be committed to diversity? Why is that key?
That key is fundamental because on the shores of America, what occurred in Asia Minor, diversity has been replicated in America. We have the combination of various ethnic groups that are located throughout the world or in America at this time. And all lives matter. Biblically based, all lives matter. Just as Black lives is indicated as matter, and of course, Black lives are the same. If we compare that to white supremacy, that's what makes the issue of Black Lives Matter being a major concern. All races matter in God's creation. All races matter. So diversity is the step to becoming a unified America. We must recognize the diversity and accept it with welcome arms and adopt a philosophy that all lives matter in this country in order for us to become one America.
Why do African Americans have to create atmosphere for dialogue?
Atmosphere for dialogue is fundamental. And in order to create an atmosphere of dialogue, forgiveness must occur. African Americans cannot create an atmosphere of dialogue until we forgive for the past wrongs. Now, the question is, forgive. In order to reconcile this country to become one nation between the races, specifically African Americans must forgive for the past atrocities that have occurred. That's the first step in reconciliation process. And that atmosphere can only be created by a genuine individual who has forgiven for the past atrocity, has love in their heart that Martin Luther King talked about in the commitment of the civil rights movement to love everyone, then to be open to allow them to discuss and talk about their experience of race in order to find out where they are.
You're listening to This Week in America. I want to ask about taking a knee during the Pledge of Allegiance. I'll give you the information on our guest on the program. Before I do that, it's Reverend Dr. Albert R. Reddick. His book is Becoming One, Volume 2, The Diversity Salad Bowl Open Mind. The book's available, as I say, wherever books are sold. You can go to readersmagnet.com in the product department and find the book there as well. Doctor, what concerns do you have in taking a knee during the Pledge of Allegiance? Again, this is something that has come about in the last couple of years, again, prominent during this season with sports now back in session. What concerns do you have about taking a knee?
First of all, as a veteran, I love my country and I have served my country. And the flag represents the sincereness of this nation's commitment to humanity. Taking a knee, first of all, the pledge is a pledge of allegiance to the flag. And of course, the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now, when it says with liberty and justice for all, I think, first of all, the fact that it's a pledge does not mean that the nation is perfect. It's not a utopian nation. But when I look at this country and to see that at this point in our history, African Americans have achieved every level of success in this nation. We have lawyers, doctors, engineers, president, governors across the state, particularly the state of North Carolina, majority of all the major cities, police chiefs in these various districts are African American females. So when I look across this nation, I think that we need to lift up the benefits and the achievements that have occurred in this nation. Now, when the Pledge of Allegiance was put in place, remind you now that the Continental Congress that was set in place was made up of wealthy white men and some that owned slaves. And that commitment to the Pledge of Allegiance was carried out during the Civil War. When this group of individuals came together in order to maintain that this nation would become one nation under God, indivisible without liberty and justice for all, that they stood together to destroy the lifestyle that was created by slavery in the South, that commitment to the flag. So I believe that any protest regarding the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, when it's the only time that we come together as one unified body in all public events in this nation, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, tennis, all national events in this country, we stand together as one nation when we pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Boy, time is going by so quickly. Becoming One, Volume 2, The Diversity Salad Bowl Open Mind. The Reverend Dr. Albert Reddick is our guest on the program. Time for a few more questions here. So much to talk about. I'm going to go back a few years. Did you make an attempt to reach out to President Obama, Vice President Biden, regarding the urgency to overcome racism during racial tension that occurred during their administration? Did you do any outreach?
Yes, I did. Matter of fact, it was in 2009 when the publication of Volume 1, Becoming One, USA and Diversity, I forwarded this manuscript to the president. And in this manuscript, there's a section that suggested that the president of the United States, after he made his speech on race, that he would create a department of overcoming racism in the White House at cabinet level to deal with the issue of race in the country. Well, lo and behold, I was surprised. I got a letter back from Vice President Joe Biden. What's so interesting is right now in this election, I got a letter back from Vice President Joe Biden in response to the book. He simply congratulated me in terms of being involved in the community, but mentioned nothing about the book, nor the idea of creating a national cabinet level position of overcoming racism in this country. He didn't mention anything about race. And the fact that the book was so timely, had they mentioned and gotten involved and recognized the importance of race at that time when they're in the White House in 2009, perhaps we would not be at this juncture now in this nation with the divisiveness and the racism across the line. So I was very disappointed that I did not get a response from President Obama or Vice President Joe Biden. And here's the envelope here in the letter from the White House, from Office of the Vice President, Washington, D.C. Joseph R. Biden, Vice President.
And by the way, the video version of this, YouTube, on our YouTube channel, if you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you can link on, or just Google it. You talk a lot about moral courage, something you write about in your book, Becoming One. Does the current president have the moral courage to deal with overcoming racism here in the United States?
Well, first of all, what is moral courage? Few men are willing to brave the disapproval of their peers, the censor of their colleagues, and the wrath of their society. Moral courage is a rare commodity, a bravery in the battle or great intelligence, yet it is the one essential vital quality for those who seek to change a world that yields most painfully to change. So mentioning why I think the current president would have the moral courage, if we look at the definition of moral courage to see that few men are willing to brave the disapproval of their peers. Well, certainly if we look at President Trump's tenure in office, he has certainly not been afraid to brave the disappointment of his peers. Second, the censor of their colleagues. Certainly he has been censored by his colleagues on both sides of the aisle, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And the courage to endure the wrath of the society. When we listen at CNN and all the news commentators for the last 3.5 years, we have been involved with ongoing negation of the President of the United States of America. So certainly he has the moral courage based upon the definition to deal with the race issue. Had it not been for President Trump, I don't think the race issue would have reached a level that the past administration is now accepting and acknowledging that racism and systemic racism exists in the nation. If it certainly didn't occur since the election of Donald Trump, so it was in place in the previous administration. And they certainly were given notice in terms of the urgency to overcome racism. The first chapter in our book deals with the urgency in this nation to overcome racism and to create a cabinet level position in Washington, D.C., where all of the issues involved in racism in this country will become under one cabinet level. And the goal is we have to overcome it. And in order to overcome racism, African Americans must forgive. African Americans must forgive because it's not a can't be solved politically. It's a moral issue that only the church can lead that struggle.
A couple minutes left in the program. Reverend Dr. Albert Reddick, our guest on the program, his book is Becoming One, The Diversity Salad Bowl, Open Mind. What's your opinion on protest happening in the streets today? What are your thoughts?
My thoughts and concerns are, number one, I'm not really a big fan of the protest culture, but I certainly can empathize with our young people who have very few outlets to experience or to express themselves and their frustration. I wonder, once all the state statues are torn down and sports mascots change, then what? The protesters are chasing windmills without long-term strategy. The Diversity Salad Bowl, Open Mind, is a long-term strategy for healing the nation and overcoming racism.
I got a couple minutes. I'm going to squeeze a couple more in here because it is so important. The book is so important. Becoming One, Volume 2, The Diversity Salad Bowl, Open Mind, by our guest, Reverend Dr. Albert Reddick. I'll give you information on that as we wrap up in the program in a couple of minutes. Why, sir, do you think racial discrimination is still a thing we're talking about in the present? Why is that?
Because Voltaire, in his famous statement, says, "I might not like what you say or agree with what you say, but I will fight to the death to allow you to speak." We are inhibiting the exercise of the First Amendment. And I think one of the main keys in that regard, the current president, one of the main distinctions between the current presidents and former president is that the current president does not filter his speeches. As a result, in this nation, the First Amendment is one of the vital and most important rights that we have in the Bill of Rights. And we should allow the nation and individuals in the nation to speak what is on their mind concerning race, and we should be open to listen in order to dialogue and to change their thought pattern. But it's important that we create the presence to allow freedom of speech in this nation, which has been harnessed as a result of the racial strife, because we fail to openly discuss and dialogue. Dialogue is fundamental. Dialogue is fundamental.
I am going to squeeze. I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your thought.
I think one of the nations that exercised this and the importance of dialogue was in South Africa during the apartheid. And we had an opportunity to spend 3 weeks immersion in South Africa in conflict resolution, where the nation opted for dialogue as opposed to Nuremberg trials. So the history and story of the suffering could be told in order for the nation to heal. America needs to be open to dialogue about race without discrimination suits, in order for us to create a climate where the nation can heal and overcome racism.
I'm going to take a minute or so, and it's unfair to ask this in that short period of time, but that's all we have left in the program, and I think you've touched on this. Is there any research about how we can finally end racial separation? And I think you're outlining a path for us in your book, Becoming One, Volume 2.
Yes, there's for example, our manuscript. And remember, our initial manuscript was a cultural audit done on a university, Eastern University in Pennsylvania, a cultural audit. Such research, for example, what is the mission of the church? Making Sense of Social Justice by Kevin DeJean and Greg Gilbert. Also, a manuscript that is fundamental to this process is Embodying Forgiveness by Gregory Jones at Duke University. Embodying Forgiveness, a Theological Analysis by Gregory Jones, Dean of the School of Divinity at Duke University. In addition to that aspect is also a forward in my first book, The I&I Model for Overcoming Racism in Age of Diversity, was written by Professor J. the Otis Roberts, who was at that time research professor of theology at Duke University. The forward was written in that publication, The I&I Model for Overcoming Racism in an Age of Diversity.
This has been such a fascinating conversation. Our guest on the program is Reverend Dr. Albert Reddick. That's R-E-D-D-I-C-K, if you're Googling. The book is Becoming One, Volume 2, The Diversity Salad Bowl, Open Mind. You'll find that at Amazon, of course, the usual places. You can find the other books by Dr. Reddick there as well. Also at readersmagnet.com/product in the product section. We'll have all that on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Doctor, I've mentioned Reader's Magnet. You've worked with them in this project of getting Becoming One, Volume 2 out and touching lives in the community. What's the process been like working with Reader's Magnet?
Oh, it's been an exciting process and certainly fulfilling. And I want to commend them for their expertise and their academic research in enabling us to bring forth Volume 2.
And the book is out there now. You'll find it at readersmagnet.com/product. You'll find it the usual place. You can link on at our website, go directly there. Reverend Dr. Albert R. Reddick, our guest on the program, is book Becoming One, Volume 2, The Diversity Salad Bowl, Open Mind. Dr. Reddick, a pleasure having you on the program. Hopefully we can do this again. Thank you for spending time with us on the program today.
And thank you for having us today.
It has been a pleasure. Reverend Dr. Albert Reddick, the book Becoming One, Volume 2, The Diversity Salad Bowl, Open Mind. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.